the traveling Halo amusement park, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on everything tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is the Latest in Tech News podcast. My name is Taylor Merrick, and I'll be your host. If you're new here, be sure to hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss a single episode. Now, let's jump right into the latest tech news, and seeing as how we're coming off the verge, at least in the U.S., of the latest Super Bowl Sunday head-to-head championship playoff match with American football. One wonders, with the lowest rated Super Bowl on record ever and the most dismal performance ever with Tom Brady and the Patriots winding up with another win, the sixth one in 17 years, one wonders if the latest offensive team can manage to make okay, I had to put this article in just for some enjoyment, and it seems like the mic is a little bit too hot, so I'll be adjusting the audio thing as we go here. Ah, for crying out loud, come on. That's okay, I'll figure it out. If you don't know already, I've been working on different formats. I've been out of the loop for a while. I know I should have done a show. Apologies for that, but personal stuff I had to take care of, but that's taken care of now. So, yeah, this article is essentially three reasons Chance the Rapper and the Backstreet Boys had a perfect Super Bowl ad. Now, I just wanted to throw this in here just for the sake of, I know it's not exactly tech news or gadget or gaming news, this is mainly a Doritos commercial, but this is, out of all the ads that aired during the Super Bowl, this one was actually a very well done one. And if you couldn't tell, they did a lot of throwbacks to the original music video for the Backstreet Boys, and the way that Doritos put this together was pretty, pretty incredible. The video opens with Chance the Rapper trying one of the new chips as the dulcet tones of the Backstreet Boys ballad plays in the background. Did they make the original hot? He asks, as we fade into a dream sequence that features fast cars, a dance crew, and Chance adding new rap lyrics over the old hit. Now, it finishes in an airline hangar as Chance is joined by the Backstreet Boys. It's perfect for several reasons. First off, it doesn't take itself too seriously. Look, chips are fun, especially Doritos. It's not a serious commodity, and they're not particularly good for you, but just add embrace the whole being silly part. It's an unusual mix. Popular rapper and a 20-year-old boy band, which is, by the way, coming back and doing their tour, still going on tour. Not to mention the fact that they're also throwing in a little bit of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Man, it's ironic. When you look on YouTube for the Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way, like the third or fourth video that pops up in the search results is the Brooklyn Nine-Nine intro segment, which is hilarious. Okay, another show that I was interested in. Okay, the original video song is great. One of the defining songs and music videos of the late 90s, and it was a mainstay. It was very, very well done video, and if those of you in marketing or advertising or sales or trying to figure out all that stuff, this is a great look at it. I didn't want to get to the point, but I was getting to the point where I wanted to scratch my eyeballs out over the latest Super Bowl video. And the ads just weren't that great. They could have been better, but this is me just ranting and raving, and I had to put this in just for a little bit of a segue before we actually get into the tech news. I'm actually wondering, did you guys watch, at least in the States here, did you guys watch the Super Bowl? Which team were you rooting for? Was it, you know, a great game? Did you enjoy it? Could it have been better? Let me know on social media, at Tech News Gadget on Twitter, Facebook, and wherever else. So, anyways, let's head on over to now the actual tech news. First up, podcasting apparently is not a small business. Believe it or not, there's money in podcasts. Hey, I should know. I've run a podcast since 2006 under my own namesake for quite a while, on and off throughout the years. I know a lot of people in the space, but apparently Spotify is in advanced talks to acquire Gimlet Media, the Brooklyn-based narrative podcast company for more than $200 million in cash, according to Recode. Gimlet has raised approximately $28.5 million in venture funding from investors including WPP, Stripes Group, Lamy Partners, Graham Holdings, BetaWorks, Cross Culture Ventures, and Lowercase Capital. 2 years ago, the startup was reportedly valued at roughly $70 million. Now, podcasting may be a relative small industry in the U.S., but if you had to guess, Spotify has bigger ambitions than that. Just take a look at the stats. The U.S. podcasting industry brought in $314 million in ad revenue in 2017, yet the global picture is much different. Here's where it gets pretty impressive. The podcast industry in China is 23 times larger, estimated to be worth an eye-popping $7.3+ billion. Why? Well, perhaps because the model there is different. Many of the podcasts in China are paid via subscription, while podcasts in America are mostly free or ad-supported. Individual podcasters in China can make $8 million per year U.S. with just 250,000 listeners. For context, Serial, which was America's most popular podcast ever, made only about $500,000 in its first year after a whopping 19 million downloads. Impressive numbers, but like stacked up to China on this global scale, the U.S. is just this tiny little chunk. It's important to note that Spotify had actively looked into ways to enter the Chinese market for a number of years. China-based Tencent Music is one of Spotify's largest shareholders. In its filings to go public, Spotify wrote, "Spotify believes the Tencent transactions allow Spotify to invest in a long-term potential of the music market in China and, in turn, TME to invest in a long-term potential of the music market outside of China." Of course, just speculating about the possibilities here, but the bigger point is that the headline that claims that podcasting businesses are small are, well, misleading. It may be small in the U.S., but if you're a company looking to expand into other territories, it's an incredibly lucrative opportunity. Andreessen's Connie Chan wrote an excellent essay on multimodal business models. She notes that product success is not just about having a good product, but also having the right business model. An excerpt from her post on how podcasts in China make money are as follows. Some podcasts rely on sponsorships and ads the way we do in the U.S., but podcast hosts can also receive tips that are split between podcaster and platform. In the following example, tip options vary from 30 cents to $21. This new model means everyone can make money and content creators have more funds to invest in better production and better content, in which everyone wins. In other words, the U.S. podcasting market is still in its infancy, still even though we're a decade into it. Because content creators are using basic monetization techniques, while Chinese podcasters are experimenting with, get this, gamification, coupons, and limited time memberships. I'll be curious to see what Spotify does with Gimlet if the deal goes through, but I'm willing to bet that with Tencent as a partner, it will have some creative ideas. So, this article showed up on Fortune.com, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes for episode number 80. So, that being said, hey, podcasting ain't so small when you get outside the pond, eh? Alright, so now the news everybody's been wanting to hear about. A Halo amusement park will be touring the U.S. this summer. So if you guys are interested in Halo, I guarantee you, you'll want to listen up. See, finally, it's time to see if warthogs are really that difficult to drive in person. Halo Outpost Discovery is a 300,000 square foot traveling amusement park packed with experiences from Xbox pivotal sci-fi series, and it's set to start touring the U.S. this summer. The show will land in Orlando, Philadelphia, Chicago, Houston, and finally Anaheim between July and September of 2019, this year. Outpost Discovery is scheduled to run for a single weekend in each city, where it will feature a real-life Halo ring and warthog, sounds like it's not actually drivable, by the way, a laser tag arena, escape room, VR and simulation stations loaded with Halo experiences and panels to attend. The Halo Ring attraction is a dome projection experience, and there are esports and kid-friendly activities planned as well, according to designers. The whole thing is being planned in partnership with Dollywood operator Hershend Live. The exact tour dates are as follows, so you want to listen up. It'll be in Orlando on July 5th to the 7th, in Philadelphia on July 19th to the 21st, in Chicago from August 2nd to the 4th, in Houston from August 16th to the 18th, and in Anaheim from August 30th to September 1st. I guarantee you at the one in Chicago in the beginning of August, I guarantee you Tyler Ninja Blevins will be there. This is, I'm just speculating it, but he's been kind of silent on Twitch about the whole entire thing. But seeing as how he used to be a professional Halo esports player, part of a team there, and knows his stuff competitively when it comes to Halo, I guarantee you he's going to be geeking out about this, and he might just get a sighting there in Chicago. If you're interested in hanging out at the Halo Outpost Discovery site, tickets are available now on their official website, which is HaloOutpostDiscovery.com. The most recent entry in the Halo franchise was 2017 Halo Wars 2, though that was a continuation of the series' real-time strategy line. Halo 5 Guardians was the most recent mainline game, and it landed in 2015. We're still waiting for the newest installment called Halo Infinite. Other than the fact that it brings back Master Chief and runs on a new Slipspace engine, well, they've been fairly mum about the new game so far. Of course, E3 2019 is right around the corner, and so is the Outpost Discovery, apparently. So I'll also have a link to this in the show notes. There's actually an announcement trailer video that goes along with this. So if you want to see the video, be sure to click over on to that. All right, time for some disappointing news. EA says holiday quarter was difficult and missed expectations. Okay, when you have a big old company, as you do, and you have many different game studios within this hub, and you fail to figure out why people are actually buying your games, or you just break the games prior to releasing them, or never actually go through it and fix the bugs, you usually wind up with stuff like this. Disappointed shareholders and trying to figure out why a gaming company can't hold its own, and then you have the other half of the people, the board, going, hey guys, how do games make money? Oh, microtransactions! That's not the case here. Apparently, Electronic Arts reported earnings for the third fiscal quarter ending on December 31st that missed the company's and Wall Street's expectations. This comes on the heels of a new Battle Royale game that dominated online discussion earlier this week. Analysts expected EA to post earnings per share of $1.94 on revenue of $1.75 billion, $1.75 billion on a non-GAAP basis, but the results fell short of that. EA's stock price fell 17% in after-hour trading to $76.40 a share, $76.40. So, apparently, in that quarter, their big game, Battlefield 5, faced serious competition from rival games such as Fortnite, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, and Red Dead Redemption 2. The results came a day after EA reported a surprise game, the launch of Respawn Entertainment's free-to-play Battle Royale shooter, Apex Legends, currently blowing up on Twitch. EA bought Titanfall maker Respawn for $455 million in 2017, in case you guys forgot. Now, while the game got 1 million downloads in 8 hours, some players expressed disappointment that Respawn said it is not yet making Titanfall 3, though it appears it's claiming more Titanfall is coming. This just seems to be a branch off into Apex Legends, which seems to be this Battle Royale mix-up mashup of the best parts of Fortnite and the best parts of Call of Duty Black Ops 4 and Overwatch, along with a whole different kind of aspect of play, but not too challenging to figure out how. And obviously seen as how they signed up some of the biggest names as partners, including Ninja, and I believe Tim the Tatman, and I think Cypher BK, and probably Dr. Lupo, and all the other ones. Shroud in that one? In that list? I don't know. Let's just say that Apex Legends this week is looking at some unparalleled growth, but very, very good marketing. The video game industry continues to grow through a year of intense competition and transformational change, said CEO Andrew Wilson of EA in a statement. Q3 was a difficult quarter for us, and we did not perform to our expectations. Here we go. I love this. Next bit. We are now applying the strengths of our company to sharpen our execution and focus on delivering great new games and long-term live services for our players. We're very excited about Apex Legends, the upcoming launch of Anthem. But what he's not going to say in the byline is, even though the beta launch and demo didn't go as great as we planned, and a deep lineup of new experiences that we'll bring to our global communities next fiscal year. During the third fiscal quarter, EA launched Battlefield 5, which was one of the top 5 holiday titles in the US, but so disappointing that they dropped it down to a $30 game within like a month. Monday's announcement of a Battle Royale game was not a major surprise, although the lack of a Titanfall 3 launch would be a disappointment. wrote, Colin Sebastian, analyst at Baird Equity Research, in a report issued before the earnings, we note increasing speculation that management will provide some framework for fiscal year 2020 earnings, although without Titanfall, we believe earning growth may be a stretch there. So, might want to be careful there, EA. You're kind of tiptoeing on the line of making the gamers happy and making the shareholders happy. And the board of directors all... Gosh, man, this is just fun. I'm so glad I'm not in that position. That's what I gotta say. So yeah, the article just goes on and talk about a bunch of other different games and how they missed it and how they should do better going forward, as with any company, but that was all filler. So there you have it. Why isn't this article loading? Okay, thank you. Thank you, computer, for working. I love you. Apparently, Xbox Game Studios is rebranding itself, signaling a big change for Microsoft's focus on gaming. Now, Microsoft Studios, the umbrella game development organization that includes 343 Industries, The Coalition, Compulsion Games, The Initiative, InXile Entertainment, Minecraft, Ninja Theory, Obsidian Entertainment, Playground Games, Rare, Turn 10 Studios, and Unled Labs is being renamed to Xbox Game Studios. As we've expanded our focus beyond the console, the Xbox brand has also evolved from its original roots. Xbox Game Studios Corporate Vice President Matt Booty said, gosh, why do you have to have a last name like that? Today, Xbox is our gaming brand across all devices, no matter how or where you want to play or who you want to play with. Now, this change is reflecting Microsoft's desire to spread its Xbox wings, and if we're reading between the lines here, it seems to indicate a dedication to expanding its gaming business beyond the Xbox console. In the past 2 years, Microsoft has committed to putting all of its first-party games on PC, and plans seem to be pointing towards an even bigger thing, making Xbox Live a platform that extends to all sorts of hardware. Conceivably, Xbox games could follow, too. You see, they'll probably discuss this more at the Game Developers Conference in March, where it'll be revealing a new cross-platform development platform that will extend Xbox Live support to Android and iOS mobile devices, as well as the Nintendo Switch. But they're also releasing the SDK to enable game developers to connect players cross-platform. It seems Xbox, obviously, has been very good in terms of cross-platform compatibility, making sure everything's up and available for that. PlayStation is still holding back on that aspect of it. We'll see how far that goes. But depending on what the player market shifts and actually wants, PlayStation might find themselves in a heap of trouble. Or they could find themselves making a really good business decision. Or vice versa, Microsoft could find themselves falling flat on their face going, well, why didn't games for Windows take off the way that it should? I don't know, maybe because games for Windows platform was poorly conceived and sucked and riddled and full of bugs and it didn't work out properly. I don't know, I'm just thinking here, like, who would want to play just on the PC? Like, maybe, but maybe it helped them understand, like, cross-platform compatibility. I want to be able to play a game on a device that I want to, and switch between devices and still be able to play my game. But track my friends, track my accomplishments, track my achievements, unlock stuff, all throughout that, and still maintain a fluid gaming experience. Maybe the evolution of the gamer has evolved. Maybe. So, hence, the evolution of the Xbox Game Studios. I don't know. Hopefully the launch of this new Xbox Live platform will coincide with new Windows Store and Xbox apps for PC with better user interfaces for downloading and managing games and partying up with friends. What do you guys think? Good idea? Bad idea? Sure, let me know on social media. Also in the news today, Samsung's upcoming smartphones will reportedly support the new Wi-Fi 6 standard, and here's what it means for you. This comes to us from businessinsider.com. By the way, the links to this article and all the other articles we covered today are over at the show notes at technewsgadget.net/80, and you'll be able to see all the show notes there. As a matter of fact, if you're actually listening to this in a podcast app of your choice right now, you should technically, conceivably, just be able to scroll up on your smartphone device and tap on the article, and it should just load up automatically for you. Pretty cool technology, huh? I do say so myself. Now, if the latest batch of rumors are to be believed, Samsung's Galaxy S10 smartphone will come with Wi-Fi 6 support. Now, it sounds lovely and new compared to previous Wi-Fi standards, which have been unfortunately graced with confusing names like 802.11ac, which is the current standard. Wi-Fi 6 is lovely and new. It's just a better name for the upcoming 802.11aX Wi-Fi standard. Now, either way, like every new generation of Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi 6 will bring with it improvements worth knowing about. So, what are we looking at here with Wi-Fi 6? Well, it's the name for the upcoming Wi-Fi standard. Every few years, a new Wi-Fi standard is introduced that brings improvements over the previous standard, but the naming system for the standards has no rhyme or reason, really. Wi-Fi standards were given names starting with 802.11, followed by a letter or numbers or letters, usually only the letters that are used to indicate the standard your Wi-Fi routers and devices use. For example, the current standard is called 802.11ac, but is usually known as AC. Now, for clear reasons, this traditional nomenclature made it somewhat confusing for regular Wi-Fi users, like anyone and everyone, to follow. They had standards had a B in 1999, then an A, then a G, then an N, and now AC. See, kind of confusing. Now, Wi-Fi 6 is technically 802.11AX, but we're happy to simply call it Wi-Fi 6, the name given to it by the Wi-Fi Alliance. That way, it's clear that Wi-Fi 6 is a 6th generation Wi-Fi standard. See, you get it? You get it? Okay. So, Samsung's Galaxy S10 is said to come with Wi-Fi 6, which is designed to be 4 to 10 times as fast as the current standard. But here's the thing, you won't actually notice it unless you have an incredibly fast internet plan. Well, why is that? Well, devices and routers that support Wi-Fi 6 will continue to use the 2.4 GHz and 5 GHz bands that we use today, but speeds will be faster on each band. And we can expect speeds 4 to 10 times as fast as the current standard, according to Network World. Now, keep in mind, though, that your speeds are dependent on the internet plan you're paying for. So if your plan includes download speeds of 200 megabits per second, you'll still only get 200 megabits per second with Wi-Fi 6. Now, Wi-Fi 6 starts making a difference in terms of raw speed if you have incredibly fast internet speeds that the current standard can't deliver. Now, what we're talking about here? Speeds over 1 gigabyte per second or 1,000 megabytes per second. But even with humble internet speeds, Wi-Fi 6 comes with still other improvements. Theoretically, it could also mean a better range. As the Wi-Fi mantra goes, you connect it to 5 GHz band for better speeds and 2.4 GHz band for better range. Now, Wi-Fi 6 is designed to be more efficient with how much data it can fit into the 2.4 GHz and 5 GHz bands. More data translates to faster speeds. Now, for 2.4 specifically, that's an enticing prospect. Theoretically, Wi-Fi 6 will let you connect to the longer range 2.4 rather than the shorter range 5 GHz for heavy data lifting, as the 2.4 GHz band will be able to offer faster speeds. Now, essentially, you could get faster speeds on a Galaxy S10 at greater distances if you're connected to your router's 2.4 GHz band. But Wi-Fi 6 is also meant to improve the Wi-Fi connection and performance in crowded spaces. How many times have you gone to Starbucks, a mall, a show, a game, a match, an arena, stadium, somewhere, and just been crashed with how bad the speeds were? Well, Wi-Fi speeds get slower as more and more devices connect to a Wi-Fi network. That's especially true in places where several people might connect to a single Wi-Fi network. Now, Wi-Fi 6 is meant to improve that, and it could help typically congested 2.4 GHz band. Intel claims that Wi-Fi 6 will deliver 4 times the speed in congested environments, which bodes well for Galaxy S10 users who often connect to crowded networks. That is, if the Galaxy S10 rumors about Wi-Fi 6 are true. Also, Wi-Fi 6 might actually improve the battery life on a Galaxy S10 as well as any other mobile device that supports Wi-Fi 6. So, Wi-Fi 6 will come with a new target wake time feature to better manage the Wi-Fi radios in mobile devices like smartphones and laptops and anything else that's battery operated and connected to the internet. TWT sets a schedule for your devices in sleep mode to receive Wi-Fi data. Currently, mobile devices that aren't being used to keep your Wi-Fi radios connected to Wi-Fi networks in case something new shows up to notify you about, like an email. That sounds like the battery saver mode you'd find on most mobile devices. Now we'll have to see how it affects notifications on a Galaxy S10. Now, will you want to upgrade your router to a Wi-Fi 6 model if you get a Galaxy S10 that comes with Wi-Fi 6? Well, not seeing any immediate need for anyone to upgrade a router if they're planning to get the new Galaxy S10, and that's if the new phone comes with the Wi-Fi 6 support. For one, routers that support Wi-Fi 6 at the moment cost about $350 to $400 US, which is pretty expensive. And the benefits of Wi-Fi 6, while we just mentioned several of them and might be great, might not be quite worth a fourth upgrade if you already have a good Wi-Fi 5 AC router. Now, if you have a 200 megabytes per second internet plan and use Google Wi-Fi mesh system that uses the AC standard, there's really not going to be any complaint. And if you're in a nice area and you have a good signal, don't really need to worry about it right now. Unless you're really going super uber-duber nuts on 4K and 8K streaming and TVs and such, then maybe you might want to consider it. But foreseeably, for the current time being, I don't think you'll probably need to upgrade your router. So there you go. But it's worth checking into it. What do you think? You excited about Wi-Fi 6? Let us know your thoughts. Coming on the heels of another announcement in which Facebook got in trouble for, well, it's almost a run-of-the-mill, like, oh look, it's 2019, what did Facebook get in trouble with this time? Well, Facebook is finally rolling out the option to unsend messages in Messenger, but there's a catch. Last April, TechCrunch revealed that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg had used his executive power to remove his own messages sent in the Messenger app, an option that regular users don't normally have at their disposal. Following the report, Facebook scrambled to make good and said that we'd soon all have deleting powers in the messaging app, and today that feature is rolling out. Well, kind of, sort of. If you open Messenger on your phone and press down on a message, you'll get an option to delete it. Now, this is very misleading. Delete only deletes the message in your own inbox. The recipient that you sent it to still has that accidental picture or ill-advised joke still sitting in their inbox or whatever you mentioned, and you may not even be aware of it. Most importantly for Facebook, that message still remains on its servers. But TechCrunch found that Zuckerberg had gone as far back as 2010 to unsend some of his own messages, including messages sent to non-Facebook employees. Now, Facebook recognized that it was giving its top executive privacy options that weren't available to users and promised to add a broader delete message feature to the Messenger app in the future or soon. At the time, a Facebook spokesperson told Gizmodo that until the feature was ready, it would no longer be deleting any executive messages anymore. I'm so glad. Because, you know, you might as well just delete a server then, while you're at that point, in your own basement. On Tuesday, Facebook announced that the new unsend option is currently rolling out to the Messenger app on Android and iOS. All you'll have to do, and I believe desktop option as well, all you'll have to do is tap the message you want to delete and select Remove for Everyone. Here's the catch. Within 10 minutes of sending a message. Gizmodo attempted to test the feature on two updated iPhones, but it wasn't available to them yet. The Facebook representative told us that it's still rolling out on the app stores and to give it some time. Now, obviously Mark Zuckerberg wasn't restricted to a 10-minute window, but when we asked Facebook if all executives will be held to the same restrictions as users, we were told that the change will apply to everyone, including Facebook employees. The representative also confirmed that deleted messages will eventually be removed from Facebook servers permanently, but it will be retained for a limited amount of time just in case someone wants to report abuse or they need to hand the information over to the cops or however that might go. Now, Messenger does have a secret message feature that has an option to delete messages based on a timer, but it can only be enabled for individual conversations. So, there you go. Excited about this feature or not? Take it as you will. Also, speaking about big tech companies and all the myriad things that they're rolling out or apologizing for, Google has a new tool that tells you when you need to change your password, and here's how it works. Now, Google launched a new tool today called Password Checkup that you install as an extension in Chrome. It'll basically alert you when you need to change your password because it might have been stolen. This is kind of interesting to note. It's a tiny plugin that you install in Chrome. Don't worry, it's easy. Once it's installed, it can let you know if you need to change your account password. If you detect that a username and password on a site you use is one of over 4 billion credentials that we know has been compromised, the extension will trigger an automatic warning and suggest that you change your password, Google said. Now, this is part of Google's password checkup tool. I'll just briefly run through how you install it. Let's see, you use the Chrome browser, you install the new password checkup tool, tap Add to Chrome, confirm you want to add it, you'll see a shield screen on the top right of Chrome once it's installed, and that's it. Now if you're browsing the web and the plugin detects that you're using a password it knows has been compromised, it will show you a warning that looks like this. It'll just pop up with a little red alert alerting you to change your password. It'll give you suggestions on how to do it, but password ultimately is up to you, all part of their whole we don't want you to get caught with your hand in a cookie jar kind of idea, but, you know, kind of nice that Google's looking out for people. So, I mean, how often are you going to be sitting there scouring the web going, oh, shoot, did they steal my password? Well, Google will let you know, because they actually have the manpower and information and technology to do it. Also, in gaming news today, there's this interesting new game out called Icanary, which is a simple drawing game that hides a deceptively deep AI. Now, this is kind of an interesting article, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes. This is from TechCrunch. Now, it may not seem like it takes a lot of smarts to play a game like Pictionary, but in fact, it involves a lot of subtle and abstract visuals and linguistic skills. Now, this AI, built to play a game like it, is similarly complex, and its interpretations and creations when you play it, as you can see, may now seem eerily human, but it's also refreshing to have such an agent working collaboratively with you rather than beating you with superhuman skills. Icanary, as the game's creators at the Allen Institute for AI decided to call it to avoid lawsuits from Mattel, has you drawing and arranging icons to form phrases or guessing at the arrangements of the computer player. For instance, if you were to get the phrase, women drinking milk from a glass, you'd probably draw a woman, a stick figure probably, and then select the woman icon from the computer's interpretations of your sketch. Then you draw a glass and place that near the woman. Then milk? How do you draw milk? There's actually a little milk bottle icon if you look for it, but you could also draw a cow and put that in next to the grass. The computer then guesses at what you put together, and after a few tries, it would probably get it. Kind of interesting. You can also play it the other way, where the computer arranges icons and you have to guess. And it looks like they have videos that go along with it here. We're not going to watch them. But let's get this right out of the way. This is very different from Google's superficially similar Quick Draw game. In that one, the system can only guess whether your drawing is one of a few hundred pre-selected objects it's been specifically trained to recognize. Not only are there some 75,000 phrases supported in Icanary, with more being added regularly, but there's no way to train the AI on them. At least the way that any one of them can be expressed is uncountable. When you start bringing in phrases, the problem space explodes, explained Ali Faradi, one of the creators of the project. Sure, you can easily recognize a cat or a dog, but can you recognize a cat purring or a dog scratching its back? Well, there's huge diversity in elements people choose and how they position them. Although Pictionary may seem at first like a game that depends on your drawing skill, it's really much more about ranging ideas and understanding the relationship with them, seeing the intent behind the drawing. How else can some people manage to recognize a word or phrase from a handful of crude shapes and some arrows? So the AI behind this game, then, is not as simple as it seems. Actually, it's quite complex, and that's really all I'm going to talk about the title of it for now. This is quite an impressive game. It goes on. The article is very long. It's actually pretty impressive. You get videos that go along with it. Let's see. If you'd like to learn more, stay tuned. The team behind the system will be publishing a paper on it later this year. Quite impressive. And I think, you can play this game right now. Let me see here. Yeah. You can play this on your computer right now. Icanary.allenai.org. Quite an impressive game. So, there you have it. Also, I had to share some Fortnite news today, because currently I'm still interested in Fortnite. So, I know you guys are too. And if you're not, well, seriously, what are you doing? Like, if you're not interested in Fortnite news, let me know. And then tell me what you are interested in, and I'll make sure to go and do that. Hey, I'm on Twitter, @TechNewsGadget, or Facebook.com/TechNewsGadget. Hey, let me know which news you want to hear about. But anyways, back to Fortnite. Fortnite's Marshmallow concert is the future of the multiverse. And in case you didn't know, Tom Brady can snap his fingers and erase half the NFL. Joke over. By the standards of outdoor EDM performances, Marshmallow DJ set on Saturday this past weekend came up a little short. 10 minutes isn't usually enough time for festival goers to congregate in front of a stage, let alone build up to a good crescendo. But the Pleasant Park crowd had been waiting for the gig for days, and so everybody notably held up their end of the bargain. Attendees danced, many doing the marsh walk in homage to the headliner behind his turntables and flanked by enormous dancing cats. Marshmallow extorted and fist pumped and bass dropped and otherwise wrung every possible bit of energy out of the occasion that he could. He had to, because by the standards of outdoor EDM performances, Marshmallow's DJ set on Saturday was also completely unprecedented. It happened on Fortnite, not on it, in the game, in the matches. People have gathered in virtual worlds for decades. People have attended virtual concerts for years. Yet the Fortnite event represented something different by many orders of magnitude. This is something unparalleled. Never happened before. By one unsubstantiated estimate, 10 million concurrent users attended the show in the game's Showtime mode. In other words, this was something much more than a concert. It was a peek, albeit a short one, at what an AR and VR suffused future looks like. Connected congregations of embodied avatars in mass-scale events that still manage to feel personal. Social VR application Allspace has been holding live events in virtual reality since 2015, and by now the Microsoft-owned platform regularly hosts improv show, podcast tapings, dance parties, and performances from the likes of Reggie Watts. But once employees heard about the Fortnite concert, they saw it as a mass-scale validation. I said, "This is it," says Katie Kelly, program owner at Allspace VR. "It's the biggest version of what we've been trying to do in this game with millions of people." And if in case you're wondering and you missed the Marshmello concert, it's actually on YouTube. Marshmello, I believe, posted it himself, called Marshmello Holds First Ever Fortnite Concert. The 10-minute long video, a whole bunch of people dancing, is quite an impressive showcase. In this case, millions undersells the game's popularity. Last November, publisher Epic Games announced that Fortnite had surpassed 200 million players around the world, quintupling its size in January 2018, a year ago now. And throughout that growth, Epic has turned Fortnite into something more akin to a medium than a game, blocking it out like television seasons, each with its own narrative arc and payoff. In June 2018, an in-game rocket launch became a mass attended event, with players cooperating to build enormous towers and platforms to give them the best view of the proceedings. This Marshmello concert, though, represents a shift in that programming, promoted in the game via flyers and a set of special challenges, not to mention a performance area that took shape over the course of a week, appearing as though it was being constructed a bit at a time. Players began to think of it as not just a mysterious reveal, such as what happens when the rocket launches, but a specific thing. The activity was the draw. This is kind of interesting. I was talking to a woman last week, an article writer, and she said, "My son is raving about how he can't be anywhere else on Saturday because he has to be at his first concert in Fortnite," Kelly says. "People keep saying, people watch that show, but if you ask those kids, they'd probably say, I was there, and by all accounts, you were there. Marshmello was there, listening, playing, in Pleasant Park." And, it's quite impressive. Quite an impressive feat. I was actually pretty impressed what Epic Games was able to pull off. Were you there for the concert? I wasn't. I was busy recovering from a very long weekend. In case you didn't know, this isn't my full-time job. I do this on the side. My full-time job had 2 days off this week, unfortunately scheduled days because it was too cold for me to work out in. And so that was shut down, and so obviously we've been spending the rest of the weekend, probably most of this week, trying to catch back up to everything that we now have to do additionally to get back to the level that we need to be at. So I miss it, but I hope it went well. I know my brother got the Marshmello skin. He was super pumped about that, but I caught it, the replay of it back on YouTube. So there you go. There's your Fortnite news of the day. And a final article for you guys today is, a little bit of a funny article. I wanted to leave it off on a happy note. I know it's been going on for a while. This is probably the longest recording I've done in a while. But working with a little bit of a new format here, testing out a little bit new ideas. I don't know. Let me know. Do you like this format? Do you not like this format? Leave me your thoughts, either here in the forums or social media. But the last article I got for you guys, you'll get a kick out of it. I'll read you the title and then the subtitle, and then we'll see. Samsung tries to turn your refrigerator into Tinder. Yes, the refrigerator dating app aims to help you find a date based on what's in your fridge. No, I'm not making this up. I have the article. It's on CNET. I'll have the link in the show notes. Now, did you know that the way to your heart might actually be through your fridge? Well, that's what Samsung is hoping for, at least. Now, I don't know why they didn't just drop this during the Consumer Electronics Show. Maybe this is why they wanted to get all the press to themselves. Now, while you might associate Samsung with phones, tablets, and TVs, the electronics giant is trying to make inroads into your love life by launching a dating app called Refrigerating. Not kidding you. Yep, Refrigerating. I can't even talk about it now. I can't even pronounce the word. The free app works with the Samsung Family Hub Refrigerator, which is a $4,000 appliance with a touch screen on the door that you can use to view the family schedule and an ingredient tracking camera that lets you double check whether you're out of milk. Now with the app, you take a photo of the inside of your fridge to share, and you can swipe right or left based on how the contents of someone else's speak to you. Never fear though, you can also just take a photo with your phone if you don't have the Family Hub. Yeah, now the idea is that what's in there, whether it's moldy leftovers or an enticing collection of craft beer, could provide a more authentic look at who you are and how you live, and ideally keep you far away from those monsters who refrigerate the honey. Now we hope people can meet under more honest or transparent circumstances with the help of the contents in the fridge, because that can tell you a lot about the personality, said Ellen Axelson, PR manager at Samsung Electronics Nordic, based in Sweden. She talked about combating the shallowness of filtered photos on social media and dating sites with something a little bit more organic. So what's more organic than taking a picture on the inside of your fridge, posting it on the internet, treating it like Tinder, and people going, wow, that's a mighty interesting looking fridge. I think I'll date that individual. Oh, nope, swipe left, swipe left, swipe left. apparently there's a lot of single people in Sweden where this idea originated. Nearly half of all households in the country consist of single adults without kids. So who knows? Maybe this is the app that gets young single Swedes together. Or maybe we can do something better. You can subscribe to PewDiePie and help him fend off T-Series. Sub to PewDie. Okay. So there's your funny and hilarious news for the day. Hope you guys enjoyed. That's all I got for you today. That wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. By the way, if you happen to miss something on the show, be sure to let us know on social media. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Tech News Gadget. We also have a community forum that is free to join and talk about at technewsgadget.net/forum. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and be sure to tell a friend. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. Thanks for listening. For the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, be sure to head on over to technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.